I kind of ended in a hurry last time, and I decided that there were some things I rushed through, and I want to back up a little bit and tell you about some examples I forgot to tell you about, and set up the basic problem I want to consider. So let me just say another couple words about this combinatorial kind of space that we're studying, these simplicial things. And I'll just do another example. So remember, I made a space out of these differential functions by taking the domain and crossing it with a simplex and just considering the simplex as varying. So I think let me just work that out in a couple of other examples. So suppose I wanted to form something like the space of closed n forms on a manifold M. So if I were to follow the recipe I studied before, I would actually, instead of looking at a space, I'd consider this combinatorial object, a simplicial set, whose k-simplices are the closed n-forms on my manifold cross the standard k-simplex. And I'm supposed to keep track of a certain amount of information. I'm supposed to keep track of roughly all the linear maps between simplices. Actually, the simplices all have a fixed ordered set of vertices, and I really only consider linear maps that are order preserving on the vertices. So let's just write that down in the first few degrees. I would have, I would think of the points of this space as closed n forms on M. I'd think of the paths in this space as closed n forms on M cross the unit interval, or the one simplex. And I have two maps I can restrict to the endpoint 0 or the endpoint 1. And then if I was to consider the triangles or two simplices in this space, I'd have three maps corresponding to the three faces of a, corresponding to the tri, in to the three edges in the triangle. And these are actually, each of these are abelian groups, and whenever you have one of these simplicial sets that's an abelian group, it's equivalent to form, you get the same information, you retain the same information by converting it to a chain complex. So I convert this to a chain complex by taking D to be the alternating sum of these maps. So I'll just write it like this, where partial I means restricting to the ith face. And that gives me a chain complex. Now, I'm belaboring this example a little because it's it will lead us up to, I think, a useful point. But
what do you mean we don't lose information by doing this? What kind of information are you talking about? Is that the homotopy type of this?
Well, the category of simplicial abelian groups is equivalent to the category of chain complexes. So as soon as I can add, I could actually recover this from the corresponding chain complex. I've simplified it slightly. The usual, this is just a faster way to say the differential. The usual correspondence, you restrict to the kernel of all the face maps except for the zeroth one, and then you can recover all of those from the chain complex. Okay. All right, but now this chain complex, I want to identify this with something more familiar. So let's just take these forms and integrate them along our variable simplex. So if I integrate these along the standard simplex, well, in dimension 0, I just get a closed n form. But here, if I integrate a closed form along something that's not closed, it's not a closed form anymore. And I just get an n minus 1 form. And Stokes' theorem will tell me that the difference between these two maps is exterior differentiation. And the same thing will happen here. I'll get an n minus 2 form. And again, by Stokes' theorem, this alternating sum of these face maps becomes the exterior derivative. So, in other words, this kind of way I'm making a space out of what's essentially discrete information by crossing with a variable simplex. In the case of the space of closed n forms, I really get the Dirac complex of M, but truncated at the n forms and regarded as a chain complex. So that's one little philosophical point, that somehow the space of closed n forms is really the truncated Dirac complex of M. So there's a similar point. A similar story would work with cocycles. So similarly, the space of n cocycles on X, and let's say they have values in an abelian group A, that space is essentially by this, that space is equivalent to the piece of the chain complex which it's equivalent to the part of the chain complex with which ends with the closed n cochains. Now, this space of differential functions I was talking about, in the case when I'm so now I want to show give you an abelian model for this space of differential functions from a manifold into an Eilenberg-MacLane space equipped with the fundamental n cocycle. So I talked about this space last time, and I went through it in a lot of detail when n was equal to 2, and we saw that the fundamental groupoid of that space, depending on which filtration I took, was a category of U1 bundles with connection and either horizontal isomorphisms, just principal bundle isomorphisms, or homotopy classes of principal bundle maps. But I want to point out, I should have pointed out another facet of this. So I'm going to lead up to an abelian model for this space of differential functions, which is really a combination of this example and this example. So all right, so now I want to combine the Dirac complex with the cochain complex. So if I have a manifold, M, there's the complex of integer cochains on M. There's the complex of real cochains on M. And then there's the Dirac complex of M. And by the Dirac complex, just by integrating forms along cycles, or chains, I have a map from the Dirac complex into the real cochains. And I want to combine these forms and these cochains into a single complex. And the way to do that is to take the pullback of this, or the homotopy pullback, in the category of chain complexes. So I'll write that as C0 star M, and this 0 will be generalized to a, I'll show you, I'll eventually put a K here. But so this is supposed to be, this is a sort of homological algebra pullback of this. So I'm supposed to have, so an element in degree k here is supposed to be something in degree k here, something in degree k here, and something in degree k minus 1 here, with an appropriate differential. And that's supposed to remind you of the operation on spaces where you take a point here, and a path connecting their images. So C0k of M is the set of k cochains on M with integer coefficients cross k minus 1 cochains with real coefficients cross the N forms on M. And just like I'll use the notation CH omega for a typical element in here. And I tersely described this last time, and I went and checked. Thank you. Yeah. Right. That was a K. You're just not reading it right. Right. K forms. Thank you. And I checked the sign and went through all the conventions I need. And the co-boundary is co-boundary C. Of course, I can check it as much as I want, but I can never remember it. It's omega minus C minus co-boundary of H d omega. Okay, so that's the complex of differential cochains. But let me just point out, there's no real new information in this yet. This homological algebra pullback is set up so that the cohomology groups of these are related by a long exact Meyer-Via-Torres sequence. So I get a sequence going from the cohomology of this to the sum of the cohomologies of these two to the cohomology of this one, and then a connecting homomorphism coming back to this. But you see, since this maps an isomorphism in cohomology, that long exact sequence will imply that this maps an isomorphism in cohomology. So the cohomology of this chain complex is just the ordinary cohomology of M with integer coefficients. Okay, so we need to introduce a variation on this in order to get something useful. And it's the same thing I mentioned in talking about this space of differential functions. It's important to filter this space in such a way, and in order to get sort of a more refined kind of information. So what I do here is I replace the Dirac complex by a subcomplex, and I'm just going to consider the forms of degree greater than or equal to some n. That's a subcomplex of the Dirac complex, and we'll call that chain complex Cn star of M. And then we'll define Hn star of M to be equal to the cohomology of this complex. So this now does have some more information, but let's look at this long exact Meyer-Via-Torres sequence again. So if I'm in a range where the Dirac complex has the same cohomology as this, then I'm... greater than, that's a subcomplex of the Dirac complex. If I wrote less than that would be a quotient. So above n, nothing's going to change. So we're going to find that H K nk of m is hk of m with integer coefficients if k is greater than n. Also, if k is less than n minus 1, this term will be 0. And so I'll just get the sort of relative term here, which is the cohomology of M with coefficients in R mod Z. So I get HK minus 1 of M with coefficients in R mod Z when K is less than N. And the interesting group, so these are still topological. The interesting group is the middle one. And the simplest thing I can say about it is to just take the piece of this Meyer-Viatora sequence that involves that term. So I get a short exact sequence that goes from Hn minus 1 of M tensor R mod Z into Hn n of M. And the co-kernel, let's write it as An of M, where An is the set of all pairs X omega, where X is an integer cohomology class. And omega is a closed N form with the property that the cohomology class of omega is X in Hn with real coefficients. Okay, so these groups, this is a co-chain approach to these Dehleen cohomology or Cheeger-Simons cohomology groups. So this group, as I mentioned last time, that group HNN is the group of differential characters of Cheeger-Simons. Now, so let's just, the group H22, that's isomorphism classes of U1 bundles with connection. And this map is the map that associates to a U1 bundle with connection the curvature form and the first Chern class. And the kernel, then, is the group of flat-line bundles. So that's the so in that sense, you can see it's storing more information than just the ordinary topological groups. Of course, it's not always so useful to work with an isomorphism class of U1 bundles with connection. You really want to work with the whole category of U1 bundles with connection. And in this picture, that amounts to working with the cochain complex rather than the cohomology groups. The cochain complex is really the more fundamental object. And then the point I just wanted to make is that the space of differential functions here of filtration. Let me write this as a K, just to connect with the notation I picked here, of filtration N. That space, remember, that's a simplicial object consisting of whose K simplices, or whose N, K, M simplices are differential functions from M cross a simplex into this Eilenberg-MacLane space with the property that the Kunneth components of the form on the simplex have degree less than or equal to n. That space, which is a simplicial set, is equivalent to this chain complex Cn0 of m closed CN, I'm sorry, CNK. It's equivalent to this truncation of the chain complex. Okay, so these are some, I just wanted to take a little more time over what these kind of cohomology groups are, and I wanted to set up another point, and that is that if I'm mapping into a space with a single homotopy group, that space has a very commutative model, that I'm looking at something that's inherently very abelian, and we'll eventually see that the real object we want, the real field theory we want to describe, isn't abelian enough to be described as a map into a space with a single homotopy group. Right. Okay. So that was just a little thing I forgot to say about some of these models, this simplicial kind of model, and this space of differential cochains. So there's another model. In this context, I mean the word. I meant simplicial set. Semi got dropped long, long ago. Because the simplicial set's what. Semi-simplicial set, right? That's right. Yeah. So in. If it's right, if there's something abelian enough, a chain complex can be made into a simplicial abelian group, which is a simplicial set, because abelian groups are sets. And this simplicial set, this space of differential functions, is equivalent to the simplicial set that comes from this. So there's no, did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So there's no, right. Okay, right. So that's how I was. That was one of the things I did at the beginning of the talk last time. Was I defined a differential function? Well, maybe I should just remind you.
Is there any difference though if you exploit the space literally and topologize?
Well, I don't know how to topologize the space of.
No, the space.
I don't think. I don't know. Isn't that a linear space? I don't think I have much topological information if I think of a space of closed forms, just in the compact open topology. Oh, right.
Well, it doesn't matter, but in many cases, denying
topology is related to the I think, right, that's right, yeah. In that case, I think that's correct. And in fact, if I take the space of maps from M into an Eilenberg-MacLane space with the compact open topology, that's equivalent to the space I get by taking the geometric realization of that chain complex I wrote down. Yeah, that's right. I could use the compact open topology. The problem is I can't talk about the filtration I want to talk about with that. I have to restrict the Kunneth components of these forms on the simplices, and I don't know how to do that just in. Okay. Okay. I wanted to give one other example of one of these simplicial space things because it'll come up. It comes up in the way, let me just give one other example because it's going to come up a little later. So there are kind of a lot of little things to say about this. I'm going to try to just say the simplest thing I need now, and in the next talk I'll come back to something more elaborate. But let's suppose I have a space X and a vector bundle V over X. Now, I want to study the space of maps from a smooth manifold M into V bar, which will be the Thom complex of V, which is the one-point compactification if X is compact. And if X is not compact, I write it as a union of compact things, and then the Thom complex is the union of these one-point compactifications. And so there's a sort of a little trick. You can always think of this X as a manifold, because the classifying space for vector bundles is a manifold, and I can just regard... So I can talk about smoothness of maps into this, and I can talk about transversality, even in the situation when X is not a manifold, by just referring to some map which classifies this bundle, some map to a Grassmannian or something. So for the purposes of this talk, let's think of X as a smooth manifold, even though X is for us going to classify different kind of structures on vector bundles and may or may not have a smooth manifold model. I also want to assume this has dimension D. Okay. So let's just look at this simplicial set, or this singular complex, of the space of maps from M into V. So a map from M into V. So among all the maps, I can just consider the ones which are transverse to zero. So I have, maybe I should say this. Right, I have all maps from M cross a K simplex into V bar. So this is some kind of simplicial set. And this is a model for all the maps from M into this Thom complex. So this is something that I'll think of as combinatorial. I'm just giving you a sequence of sets and some face and degeneracy maps between them. And this is the topological space of all maps with, say, the compact open topology. Now, sitting inside here are the transverse maps. And I mean maps that are transverse to the zero section. And the beautiful thing about this simplicial theory, this simplicial point of view, is that this map is a homotopy equivalence of simplicial sets. So this is an important point, and the space of transverse maps does not, in general, have the homotopy type of the space of all maps, but the singular complex, the transverse singular complex, does have the right homotopy type. And there's a good example to bear in mind. Let's just suppose V is R1, and my base space is a point, and we'll take M to be a point. So in order for a map to be transverse to this point, it has to miss that point, because I can't make the tangent space add up. There's no tangent space to add up. So the space of transverse maps from a point, so maps from a point into R1 is just R1, but the transverse maps is R1 minus the origin. So these have different homotopy types. But in this, in the transverse singular complex, so my points are still just all the points of this that aren't in the origin, that are not the origin. But now I'm allowed a one simplex. So a one simplex, well, let me just write the inclusion, say, of this one simplex into the line, this is transverse to zero. So in the space of transverse maps, I do have a path connecting this point and this point. So the space of transverse maps, the topological space of transverse maps, has the wrong homotopy type. But if I do this singular complex game, then the space of transverse maps does capture the space of all maps. So this is, I think this is probably due to René Thome, and it's underlies his cobordism, his interpretation of bordism in terms of homotopy theory. So now, given a map from M cross a K simplex to this which is transverse to zero, we can just pass to the inverse image of the zero section. And that gives me a submanifold, sigma, sitting inside M cross the K simplex of codimension D. together with a map from sigma into X, which classifies the normal bundle. So this sigma, I'll say another word about this, but I want to think of this as some kind of classifying space for structures, like the classifying space for the spin group. Or maybe it's something more complicated. I might have a spin bundle together with an integer cocycle. So this would be the classifying space for the spin group cross an Eilenberg-MacLane space. So this X just stands for some space that's storing geometric structures on sigma. And you have to also think through what transversality means in the case of manifolds with corners, but I think if I just draw a picture, you'll get what I mean. So in this case, a zero simplex would just be some manifold sigma over M. A one simplex would wind up being a manifold with boundary sitting over M cross the unit interval. And a two simplex will be some kind of manifold with corners oops, I didn't draw this right. This has to come back. Well, this you're supposed to think of as sitting over the two simplex. Okay, so it's kind of a cobordism between cobordisms or something. All right, and there's a sort of the other beautiful thing, and really this is just a reading of René Thome's paper on bordism, is that the homotopy type of this space is also captured by the simplicial set of this data, just consisting of manifolds embedded with. So I can think of it more prosaically. I have a manifold with some structure embedded in M. Those are the points of this space. The paths are the cobordisms between those manifolds. The two simplices are cobordisms between the cobordisms, or manifolds with corners, etc. And again, this very geometric model also captures exactly the same homotopy type as this space of maps. Yeah, I mean M is in a different dimension and we're just projecting to this is supposed to be a picture of M cross. Well, that's, if you want, that's the projection down to delta K, and I can think of M as, you know, this is sitting here embedded in M, and here's M cross the unit interval, and here's M cross the two simplex. Okay, so I wanted to mention this for two reasons. I wanted to just point out that this combinatorial approximation to spaces in some situations gives you a better approximation to the space than some more naive notion of function space. I also wanted to locate a maneuver we're going to do later in sort of topology. And that is that this business about, you know, having something associated to manifold, something associated to cobordisms, perhaps something higher, that in topological terms, that has to do with a cobordism theory. And we'll see, I'll eventually be combining this notion of differential function with this picture of cobordism, and we'll see that this is one kind of source for topological field theories. And so then I can describe some topological field theories that don't have good geometric interpretations using more sophisticated topology, in particular more sophisticated topology involving cobordism. So before I get into that, though, let me do another simple example and just kind of set up the problem. Okay. All right. So I want to describe a kind of oversimple version of topological field theory, and let's describe differential functions. As topological field theories. So, let's suppose that we have a space X and a cocycle iota. That iota is a real cocycle, but let's actually suppose that it was an integer cocycle. And I want to consider, so now suppose I have a map, a differential function from a smooth manifold into X. Then, by definition, the pullback of I, H, omega, that's a differential cocycle on X. So, on M, I'm sorry. So I'm using this symbol to stand for cocycles in that cochain complex I called C of D. Okay, so just by definition. So let's suppose, now I'm going to imagine I have a parameter space around. So suppose M has dimension d minus 1, and I have a family of differential functions into x iota. So I'm thinking of x as kind of taking care of some integrality properties. It might be forcing this form to be, it forces this form to be an integer cohomology class, but it also forces it to not just be any integer cohomology class, it forces it to be one that's pulled back by a map into X. So I might not be able to get every integer cohomology class. This X might store very complicated relationships between cohomology classes. It might be some space that's universal for a complicated relation between cohomology classes. But we're just going to focus on this underlying differential cocycle I get. Okay, so in that case, so this gives me a differential cocycle of degree d on my d minus 1 manifold. And I can integrate that along m. So that means I integrate the form and I slant the cocycle against the fundamental class and slant h. And integration is compatible with the, and slant product are compatible inside the real cochains. So that gives me an integration that gives me a way of integrating this. And that's an element in Z 1, 1 of S. And that has an underlying cohomology class, which is the space of smooth maps from S into the to U1. And in fact, you can give an explicit formula for the map. It's just e to the 2 pi I times the integral of H over M. And that's my map. So I have this space sitting around just as an auxiliary parameter space. It's not going to play a significant role. It's just there so that I can think of things as moving in families. But a differential function then into a space x iota associates, if I have a differential function from a D minus 1 manifold in, I get a point in U1. And I want to think of this as the topological term in a Lagrangian for some kind of topological field theory. So if I do the same thing in codimension 2, if I have a differential function, from something of codimension 2 mapping into x iota, that gives me still an element in ZDD. And now if I integrate that over M, I get a cocycle in this chain complex, which we decided is a U1 bundle with connection. And I could pass to the underlying cohomology group and look at the isomorphism class of U1 bundles, but it's better just to look at this. And now suppose I have a cobordism between two of these. And let's suppose this cobordism, like in that picture, comes equipped with a map to the unit interval. And I have a map into x iota. Then I can take this same d cocycle, this differential d cocycle, and integrate along the fibers of this map. And that will give me an element in z 2 of s cross the 1 simplex. Now, remember my talk last time. We're thinking of this as our space. So this is a point in a space. These are our one simplices. And last time I worked out the fundamental groupoid of this space. And I decided that the points were U1 bundles with connection. And the morphisms, the paths were principal bundle maps. And depending on which filtration I was in, they had to preserve the connection or they might not have. So at this level of generality, there's no reason that the Kunneth component here, if I just have a standard differential function, there's no reason that the Kunneth component will be restricted here. So what this will give me is an isomorphism of principal bundles. Okay, so this is the kind of data that goes into a topological field theory. I have this Lagrangian term. I have the U1 bundles with connection. I have a Hermitian line associated to every D minus 2 manifold, and to cobordisms between them, I have unitary isomorphisms between those lines. So this again, this isn't particularly original. I think I learned about this connection between Cheeger-Simons cohomology and topological field theories from a paper of Gawetzki. But anyway, this is just a little bit of a refinement of that. I'm not working at the level of cohomology classes, and I've set it up so that I have an auxiliary parameter space which can encode complicated and non-linear relations between cohomology classes. So the theory with just plain differential characters is a very abelian theory, and the theory from the point of view of differential functions encodes, has the ability to encode more complicated relations between co-cycles. Okay. Yeah.
So all that sounds tantalizingly familiar, but I can't quite make the connections to what I know. So the most standard case for Chern-Simons theory is d equal to 4 or 3?
Okay, so I'm glad you asked that. I'm also glad you clarified the question, because otherwise I'd have had to ask you to tell me everything you know, and that would have been a lot. Okay. the thing I was forgetting to make a point. So this is really formal. I mean, it's a tantalizing picture, but it's a very formal game, because I gave myself a differential function. And in the kind of examples I have in mind, in the classic kind of examples, so in the classic kind of examples, X might be a Lie group G, and iota, maybe a simply connected Lie group, and iota a 3 co-cycle. And then I'm getting the kind of things that go into the Wessamino-Witten model. I think I said that right. No, or is that the... maybe I'm just mean the... Yeah, okay, sorry, right. So that's one kind of example. Another would be that X would be BG and iota in a 4 co-cycle on X. And then that's the classical, or the, then that's Chern-Simons.
I mean, when you say the Wessamino, you get the Wessamino
term. Yeah, I'm sorry. I get the Wessamino term and kind of the story of that term in the action. No, I'm not getting the whole model. But I hope my, so this, in this case, I'm getting the story of the Chern-Simons term. But everything's, the point I forgot to make is that I gave myself a differential function, and those aren't just coming up in nature. I kind of rigged it so that I got the field theory. So the other thing I should have said is that geometrics, there are natural ways to get out of geometric structures differential functions. So for instance, my map into BG, that classifies a principal G bundle over M. And if I want to refine that map to a differential function, I can do it by giving my principal G bundle a connection. So this was the point I was ending with last time. So this is just classifies a principal G bundle, and then a connection gives me a differential function. So I could take S to be the space of connections, and then I have a differential function in that space. So I don't know, Mike, if that answered your question.
Okay, so if M to the D minus 1 is a 3 manifold,
yeah.
Your second case, X is BG.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the quantized invariant. Because he's integrating over all choices.
No, I'm not yet integrating over all choices. S might be the space of connections. So to each connect, so I get a.
Oh, then it's a function dependent on connection. So
yeah, it's the Lagrangian. It's the exponentiated.
I see. Depending on each connection, now I see a point in the circle, which is U1.
Yeah.
And then you've written that. I can't quite read it. It's
by I just gave you a formula, integral over H, where H was the term in. H was the term in the differential function.
Oh, that would be the Chern Simons.
That's that works out to be the Chern Simons term. Yeah. You're shaking your head, Peter.
I don't see the map from a manifold cross of connection. Can only map M cross the space of connections to BG?
I just have that map is just projecting to M and going into BG. But a differential function is more than just a map. It's three pieces of data: a map, a form, and a cochain. And the differential of the cochain is the form minus the pullback of the cocycle.
So what is that cochain? I guess
well,
I'm missing this W in your notation.
Omega. Omega is a. Well, here. I'm sorry. Yeah, omega's the four form. Iota's a cocycle on BG, an integer cocycle in the cohomology class of that form.
And what is omega on the space? Oh, I see, that's
the omega's the, yeah. Omega's the Chern-Vey form. And H is sort of the Chern-Simons piece. So I'm resisting making it completely explicit because it's a little it's still a little elaborate. I mean, I have to be clever about what kind of cochains I take on BG. I know it's better, I think, if we save that for private. The point I just right. Okay. 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 So these are, in some sense, very linear kinds of field theories, and I want to. So let me just set up the kind of examples I plan to generalize. So I want to give you an example which is intrinsically, or which you can see is not cohomological to begin with. So now I'm going to leave all this stuff of differential functions and differential function spaces and just go to some classical geometry and tell you the story that I want to generalize and describe in this language. Okay. So suppose I have a spin C manifold M. And let's study the index of the D-bar operator associated to the spin C Dirac operator. And I want to look at the four-form contribution. So the contribution in degree 4 is C squared over 8 minus P1 over 24, where C is the C is the first Chern class of the spin C line bundle, or the determinant of the spin C structure. So this is a typical, right, so I can't quite describe this just in terms of this complex of differential cochains. And the reason I can't is that this term isn't an integer cochain, even though when I integrate it over a four-dimensional spin C manifold, it gives me an integer. And so there's nothing in the theory of this chain complex that lets me encode universal relationships like this, like certain rational combinations of characteristic numbers of manifolds of certain geometric structure being integers. And these kind of relations are encoded in cobordism spaces, and that's ultimately the reason we have to leave this world of this sort of cochain world and get into the more topological world. But there's some facets of this I want to illustrate. So let me just stick with this geometric story for a minute. So I want to call this expression kappa of C. And kappa of C also gives me these same kind of ingredients in a topological field theory. So if this was a three-dimensional spin C manifold, kappa of C would, I'd get a point in the circle. On a two-dimensional one, I'd get a Hermitian line, and if I had a cobordism between these, I'd get a map of these Hermitian lines. So it's the usual kind of story. I want to vary this. It's important to consider the variation of spin-c structure. So in this language, I can change, if I change the spin-c structure by two-dimensional cohomology class, or really by a Hermitian line bundle, that will change c to c minus 2x, where x is some two-dimensional. It depends how I'm thinking of this. X could be a two-form, or it might be a two-dimensional cohomology class, or I might be thinking that it's a that this refers to the square of a Hermitian line bundle. So if I make this variation, then kappa of C this turns into x squared minus xc over 2. So I get so this gives me this term gives me some kind of field theory on the space of spin C structures on this manifold. So again, so I could take the space of all spin C structures and, well, let's just leave it at that. So there's also a field theory here with input a two-dimensional cohomology class. So this might enter into the Lagrangian if I was on a three-manifold, or on a two-manifold, this will define a Hermitian line bundle over the space of spin-C structures, which is a torsor for the Jacobian in that case. Okay, so that's one kind of example. These are going to be tangential characteristic classes. These are tangential characteristic classes. Okay. So another. But again, this is a kind of universal relation. You somehow, if you're going to understand this, we can understand this from the point of view of index theory, but there's a universal relation here that the square of a two-dimensional class is always congruent to the, on a four-dimensional spin-C manifold, the two-dimensional class times the first Chern class mod 2. So that's one kind of example. And these also give me the same kind of topological field theories, but they're not quite as cohomological because I've got to make sense of x squared over 2 rather than just x squared. So there's another case that's important that comes up if I'm looking at the six-form contribution of the index. So in that case, that's equal to c cubed minus p1 times c over 48. And if we call this kappa of c, for some reason I decided to consider the variation this time by adding 2x instead of subtracting. The point is that this gives me, maybe I should have spelled it out, if I have a, that this expression, so on the space of, if I have a two-dimensional spin-C manifold on the space of these x, this defines a Hermitian line bundle. This expression, okay, even though you know, this doesn't look like an integer cohomology class. By the time I'm done integrating it over the manifold, I wind up with a Hermitian line bundle. And that line bundle, of course, is just the determinant of the spin C Dirac operator. So these are... okay, did that answer your question, Greg? Okay. All right, now let's look at the six-form contribution. And so now... So this sort of corresponds to a three-dimensional topological field theory where this two-form, or really I should think of it as a spin C structure, is one of the fields. So we can look at the same thing in dimension, the six-form contribution. So again, So this thing will be a five-dimensional topological field theory where I could think of the space of fields as being, again, a two-form, or more, it's better to think of it as a spin C structure. So this difference now is it's x cubed over 6 plus cx squared over 2 plus 3c squared minus p1 over 24x. So the important thing I just want to point out, that's x cubed over 6 plus lower terms. And of course, if I did this in dimension 2n, I would have an x to the n over n factorial plus lower terms. So here I get, again, a topological field, a five-dimensional topological field theory, which with a two-form field in the story. So these are things I can describe geometrically in terms of index theory. There's no mystery to setting these up. As I said, but they aren't quite, they're not quite cohomological, because I need to somehow encode the relation that by the time I'm done integrating over my manifold, this expression turns out to be an integer, and this expression turns out to be an integer. So, the whole reason I want to talk about this is I want to talk about generalizing these formulas to higher dimensions. So in the story of the M-theory 5-brain, we encounter an expression like that. You encounter something like x squared minus x. Well, now it's denoted lambda over 2, where x is a 4-form, or really a differential 4-cocycle. And now there's no, there isn't an obvious index theory interpretation. I'd have to somehow couple some operator to something that comes from a 4-form. And then the analog of this is in the M-theory action, you get an expression that looks like x cubed over 6 plus lower terms on an 11-dimensional spin manifold. And again, there's no obvious index theory interpretation of the story of this topological field theory. So when I say there's no obvious one, that's not to say that there isn't one. There's work of Diaconescu, Fried, and Moore certainly informed by work of Witten that does describe these. To describe these in terms of E8 index theory. So you can do, there is an index theory approach to these terms, but I think I'm going to describe a topological approach, which I think fleshes out kind of more of the, well, it's perhaps a more flexible tool. It would generalize to other dimensions as well, and I think it highlights some of the other subtleties in setting up this story. Okay, so this is sort of where I'm going. What I had in mind was generalizing these examples to higher dimensions where I don't have readily available an index theory interpretation, but I still want to get the same geometric content, namely, you know, line bundles or points in the circle attached to D minus one manifolds, Hermitian lines attached to D minus two manifolds, and that story. Okay, so gosh, I was hoping to finish early again, but there's another point I need to make. I want to highlight what's really the core non-abelian nature of these kind of field theories, as opposed to the ones that just come from integrating an integer cohomology class. So for that, let me just focus on another example, which is let's look at the field theory on spin manifolds. So the three-dimensional topological field theory associated to the Pfaffian of the Dirac operator. Okay, so this is something that, let me try to set this up. So this is something that associates to every three manifold, every three-dimensional spin manifold, a point in U1, and to every two-dimensional spin manifold, a Hermitian line, and to every cobordism between these, a unitary map of Hermitian lines. But there's really another property that these theories are supposed to have, and that has to do with the disjoint union of manifolds. So, for instance, if I have two of these two-dimensional manifolds, I'm supposed to go to the tensor product of Hermitian lines. And here I'm supposed to go to the product of these elements in U1. And here, there's something that relating the tensor product of the maps. And there's even more structure. So there's a monoidal structure. And there's also a symmetry that's important. After all, the disjoint union of M1 and M2 is isomorphic to the disjoint union of M2 and M1. And if I tensor two Hermitian lines, that's isomorphic to the Hermitian line I get by flipping. But so this kind of data is something you probably are familiar with. It's something that in algebra is called a Picard category. So a Picard category is a groupoid category where every map is invertible. It's also equipped with a symmetric monoidal tensor. And that tensor has to have the property that every object is invertible under tensor. So you're supposed to think of the classic example as the category of line bundles over a space and isomorphisms of line bundles with the monoidal structure of tensor product. Now, Picard categories are relatively easy to classify. So let's suppose C is a Picard category. Then there's two invariants I can write down, pi 0 of C, which is the set of isomorphism classes of objects of C, and pi 1 of C, which is the automorphism group of E, and E will be the identity object for the tensor structure. So in the example I was mentioning of the category of line bundles, E would be the trivial line bundle. So E is the unit for the tensor structure. Now, there's one other invariant that comes up. There's one other invariant of a Picard category. And that is the... So let's see, to describe it, I have to point out one other dumb property. In a Picard category, the automorphism of any group, any object A, is canonically isomorphic to the automorphism group of the trivial object. And that's just given a map from A to A. We send it to... we tensor with the identity map of A inverse. And then this is isomorphic to the trivial object. This comes equipped with an isomorphism to the trivial object. And I have an automorphism of the trivial object. Conversely, given an automorphism of E, I could tensor with the identity map of A and get an automorphism of A. So the automorphism group of any two objects are canonically isomorphic. if you think of another example of a Picard category is the fundamental groupoid of a space that's a group. Actually, has a homotopy commutative group structure. And then the fundamental group at any two points are canonically isomorphic. There's no inner automorphisms, no conjugation acting. Okay, so let's start in a Picard category with an object A, and every object comes with the flip symmetry, which flips the two pieces. And so I can regard that as an element in ought, or it gives rise to an element in the automorphism of the trivial object, which is B. And this operation gives me a homomorphism from A, the set of isomorphism classes of objects, into B. It gives me a map from A into B. And in fact, in a symmetric monoidal category, you assume that the square of this flip map is the identity. That means that this has to factor through A tensor Z mod 2. So this is another invariant of a Picard category. We have the isomorphism classes of objects, the fundamental group, the automorphism of any object, and the and this thing here, which is the K invariant. Now,
what's capital A?
Capital, oh, did I change my notation? Dear me. I'm sorry. A was pi 1 of pi 0 of C, and B was pi 1 of C. I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that, but. K invariant. And then there's an E pointing down and another one pointing this way. I test down there, Greg. Okay. Okay, now let me just point out another topological coincidence that if N is greater than or equal to 2, homotopy classes of maps from the Eilenberg-MacLane space KAN to KB N plus 2 is Hom of A tensor Z mod 2 into B. And that's also H N plus 2, of course, of K A N with coefficients in B. So this was computed by Eilenberg and McLean long ago. But so if I start with two groups and a map between the Eilenberg-McLean spaces, I can form the homotopy fiber of that map. And I get a space X with two homotopy groups. So X has pi nx equal to A, pi n plus 1x equal to B. And the only non-trivial invariant is what topologists call the K-invariant, which is the relation between those homotopy groups. And in fact, Picard categories are the world, a category, the two category of Picard categories, is equivalent to the two category of spaces with two consecutive homotopy groups and no other groups, as long as those homotopy groups are in dimension greater than or equal to 2. If I wanted to lower this, I would have to consider spaces with some extra structure, like a homotopy commutative multiplication or something like that. So that's why this is called the K-invariant, because of the K-invariance in topology. And you can already see then that, so I talked earlier about linear things and things having to do with ordinary cohomology as having to do with spaces like an Eilenberg-McLean space with a single homotopy group. But really there's room in these Picard categories to talk about spaces with two non-vanishing homotopy groups and a little bit of information about how they're wired together. So if we go back to this example of the Pfaffian of the Dirac, let's go through this maneuver and calculate the K invariant. So let's let sigma, which I'm going to draw as a point, be a Riemann surface with a non-bounding spin structure. So let's suppose this is a Riemann surface with a spin structure for which the mod 2 index of the Dirac operator is not trivial. So with a non-bounding. And let's just see if we can make sense of this field theory in the naive way I've set. So it would somehow go from the cobordism world of spin manifolds to the world of Hermitian lines. You know, I should have said up here, I'll just stick it here, that the Picard category of Hermitian lines, well, that has pi 0 is just trivial because they're all Hermitian lines are isomorphic, and pi 1 is U1. That's the automorphism group of any Hermitian line. And let's just see if that makes sense by calculating the K invariant. So I have this Riemann surface here with the non-bounding spin structure, which I'll just draw, I'll think of as spin up. I'll just draw it going up. And now I'm supposed to, in order to compute the K invariant, take two copies. I'm supposed to take A disjoint union A and form the isomorphism between them that switches the two copies of A. So that's visibly going to be this cobordism, where this is indicating the spin structure on the parameter space. Now I want to compare this to the automorphism group of the trivial or empty manifold. So I'm supposed to take the identity map of this copy of A It's supposed to be the identity map of the opposite one, and the identity map of the inverse of this A. And tensor them in, and then contract the two A's. So I should contract them by forming this cobordism. And so this is a map from the trivial, the empty spin manifold to the empty two-dimensional spin manifold, or a map from the trivial Hermitian line to the, if I study the Fathian of Dirac, it gives me a map from the trivial Hermitian line to the trivial Hermitian line. And what map is that? Well, that's e to the pi I eta of this three manifold, which is my sigma across the circle, but it's sigma across the non-bounding, across the circle with the non-bounding spin structure. And it's easy to calculate that this is negative one. So the K invariant is forced to be non-zero in this case. And in fact, I can't, as we all know, I'm not really supposed to think of the Fathian as a Hermitian line. I'm supposed to think of it as a graded line. And I should have gone to the, I should have graded this according to the mod 2 index on sigma. And I should have landed in the category of graded Hermitian lines. That category has a non-trivial K invariant, and so this story of the Fathian of Dirac isn't a story about cohomology, it's a story about something more complicated, and next time I want to talk about how these things generalize to higher dimensions. All right, that's it.
Like the analog, when you mentioned the example going from line to connection. Is it different?
I guess I would say it lets you produce the kinds of, it lets you produce very geometrical structures out of topological situations where you don't have a good geometric interpretation. So, you know, a two-dimensional cohomology class, if I have some story about that in cohomology, I can probably interpret that as something about, you know, line bundles. But a four-dimensional or a six-dimensional cohomology class, I won't have such a story. But the, yeah. That's all. So this machine is kind of giving you away in the absence of geometric interpretation of still getting this refined kind of geometric information. So I hope to spell that out better next time. Yeah.